Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR show this week. It is a guitar legend, rock and roll royalty, one of the best-selling live albums of all time. None other than Peter Frampton on the show. And we get into some cool stuff. Really, really interesting dude. And right now, by the way, we added a new SDR t-shirt. Really cool shirt. If you head on over to podcastmerch.com, you could pick yourself up a new shirt, a hoodie, or one of our other classic designs. I really like the new design. It looks like an old school cassette tape with SDR, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll on it. I wish I had one to wear myself, but for some reason, Dylan can't get it to me. I don't know why. But here it is right now. It's an amazing episode, Peter Frampton. Remember, we do it live every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And you can go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR, get 20% off a 7-day free trial, and hear every episode a week early. Imagine you're a Peter Frampton fan. You could have heard this 5-6 days ago and no commercials. It's just that easy. But really, just listen anywhere. Just spread the love anywhere. That's all we care about, is getting the show more and more popular every single day. So here it is right now, the Peter Frampton episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's beat, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know.
It is the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. This happens every once in a while, and it feels great to say when you have a goddamn legend on the show. It happens every so often.
Grammy winning guitarist. Thank you so much. But I'm here like every... Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It's that...
It's not you, Gina. Anyway, it's not you, Gina. Not you.
I was embarrassed.
Grammy winning guitarist. He's got a star of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He just announced the last few dates of his career. Solo tour. Got a great book that I want to talk to you about as well. None other than at Mr. Peter Frampton on Instagram. It is Peter Frampton. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. And thank you for having me.
I want to say this. I noticed on your Twitter that you say you're looking for the perfect sound. Yes. I would like to say perhaps it is my gorgeous voice. My voice is very luxurious. And I'm wondering how you feel about it.
It does have a very warm feeling. I get a very nice feeling from your voice, but it's not the sound I'm looking for.
Oh, shit. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I believe the sound he's looking for is anything else. I think it's anything else. Okay, just check.
And also, I know your birthday is right around the corner, so I wanted to say happy birthday. It's coming up in a couple of weeks. And congratulations on, was it last year, you became a frampa, as you call it.
Yes, I did. I have Elle is my, she's going to be 2 on April 6th. So yeah, my
wow. Dad. Yeah, that's amazing. So now
I want to pandemic. Yeah.
I literally just finished your book, but I will say to anyone that hasn't read it yet, don't buy the actual hardcover, buy the audiobook. And the reason is this: A, you play a little guitar elements throughout the book, which is, I don't know how you would represent that in a book, but on the audio side, you get to hear you play and sing and stuff a little bit. But who knew Peter Frampton can do voices, can do accents,
wow,
and imitate other people. You do a pretty good Ringo Starr, and it opens with you doing some bizarre Spanish accent to tell one of the craziest stories that I've ever heard. And it, you know, the beginning of it starts at the beginning of the book and it finishes at the end of the book, which is how you finally got a guitar back after 30 something years. That is a crazy story.
It's bizarre. I mean, I've had various people want to make it into a film. It's just so bizarre. But you want me to tell you the pre-seed version, the short?
I think that anyone that doesn't know this story should know this story in its entirety. So don't feel you need to edit it, especially that you almost got it back and then you didn't. I mean, it seems like you couldn't write a better story.
No. So in 1970, I was playing in San Francisco at the Fillmore West with Humble Pie, and I had just got rid of a guitar. I've swapped one for this Gibson, a hollow body guitar, which I love those guitars. And but Humble Pie played so loud that every time I turned up for the solo, those guitars feed back. So my solos were, ooh, that was about it. You know. Mm-hmm. So this friend of mine from San Francisco came up and said, couldn't help noticing you having a problem. So he said, why don't you try my Les Paul tomorrow night? I said, I should never have sold that SG, you know? So anyway, he brings it over the following morning. I get it out of the case. It's a black Les Paul. It's the guitar we all know now. And, so I picked it up and played it, and it was like a dream. It was like it was made for me. You know, the neck was perfect and whatever. So I played the rest of the shows at Fillmore West, maybe two or three more shows nights with that guitar without my feet touching the ground. It was so amazing. Wow. And so at the end of the run there, I said to Mark Mariana, that's his name. And I said, Mark, I don't think there's a I love this guitar. I don't think there's a possibility that you could ever sell it. Is there? And he said, no. I said, well, I understand. And he said, no, I want to give it to you. So, wow. And so anyway, meanwhile, I have given him so many guitars.
That was a smart move on his part.
They suck.
I've made it worth its while. It's like a really guitar, you know. So, but anyway, so then I play from 1970 all the way, finishing off with my stay with Humble Pie, and then all my solo career up until 1980. So every session I did, every record I did, the live record, other people, all the sessions I've ever done for other people, myself, in that 10 years was that guitar. Then we play South America in 1980. And we had just finished playing Caracas, Venezuela. And we had a day off. So the gear, band gear, flew on a cargo plane.
Right.
From Caracas to Panama, where our next show was. Well, unfortunately, you know, it was tragic. You know, people died, but it never got off the runway. So all our equipment was on board there, and it just went up into a huge fireball for hours. And so we pretty much knew that everything was gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the tail broke off, and
Jesus,
the guitars down first of all, and the guitars were in the tail. So it so what they think happened was, when my tech went down there, JD went down there a week later to see the, you know, what's left, because we had to go on and do other shows with new gear. They said nothing survived. Mm-hmm. Well, the guitars did survive, apparently, and they were sold, you know. They were, you know, so stolen from the plane. So now I'm thinking, I find out I'm having lunch in Panama, and my tour manager comes in and tells me about the crash. And I said, my guitar. And he said, yeah. And, you know, and unfortunately, human life, you know, and that we didn't really think too much more about the gear at that point.
Right. That's by the way, where you and I would differ. I'd be like, fuck the people. My guitar is gone.
Oh, I knew I liked
it. So, we got plenty of people in the world. There's one of my guitar.
I know. So anyway,
focus on the problem, people.
So I spent 30 years. Gibson wonderfully made me a lookalike, you know, Peter Frampton custom guitar, whatever. And so people will come up to me, is that it? Is that the one? Is that the one on the... No, it's not. So it's, oh God, it's like it, but it's not the one. So anyway, 30 years go by, and I get an email from a guy in Holland, and there's a dozen photos of my guitar now. And I screamed, you know, I couldn't believe it. And I knew it was mine immediately.
You could tell immediately, because look, I'm not a guitar player, but you could look at the guitar and say, oh, that's definitely my guitar.
Uh-huh. I didn't tell him that, though.
Right.
So I didn't want to have to, you know, I got given this the first time. I don't want to have to buy it back. So anyway, it took another couple of years to actually get it back. This kid had come in. It was in
Curaçao.
Curaçao. Yeah. Curaçao Island. And this kid came in and said to this luthier, could you fix this guitar? It doesn't play very well. And it was, you know, his father's guitar that he'd bought, obviously a stolen piece of merchandise, and hidden it away now because everybody was getting a little wise to what this might be. So the luthier said, leave it with me overnight and I'll make it playable for you. You know, mm-hmm. you know, restring it and clean it up. And so anyway, he knew exactly what it was. And so he called his friend in wow. Holland, and who is a guitar nut, and it's a Dutch island, Curaçao. And he said, check these pictures out. He said, take all the forensic photos you can. Take the neck, take the body, take the this, and, you know, and I'm going to send it to Frampton. And so when I got the email, you know, it was, I knew where it was, but it was like, as soon as the kid came back the next day, and I'd already seen the photos at this point, kid comes back next day and the luthier says, you know what this is, don't you? This is Frampton's guitar. And he grabbed the guitar and ran away. So another year goes by. Jesus. All of a sudden, we know where it is. We just don't know.
I mean, knowing it's in Curaçao is not very much leading you to anything. There's a lot of people that live there.
So a year later, the kid comes back to the luthier and says, look, $5,000. I want to buy a new Gibson. This one's shit. So I'll pay me $5,000 for this. And he can have it back. So that's what I did. But it's the interesting part is that the luthier did not want to sell it to the kid because he would be selling stolen merchandise,
buying stolen merchandise. Right.
And he thought, you know, we were going to have the FBI waiting for him in Miami when he bought the guitar back. So
that's such a crazy story.
Yeah, so in the end, the kid wants a new guitar, gives it to him, and then so the luthier doesn't want to buy it, so he goes to the Minister of Tourism of the island of Curaçao and says, Curaçao should buy this for Peter Frampton. So I couldn't put the island in jail.
Wow.
And then when the minute you got it back, you immediately felt like, oh, this is home again. This is my, I mean, it's from Frampton Comes Alive. It's from that record. It's that record. It's that guitar. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, when we verified it and everything, and Gibson were there and photos and films and all, there's a lovely YouTube video of me getting it back actually. And, Gibson had it for a while. We were in the middle of the 35th anniversary tour, and we were starting up again in the spring February, March. And I got the guitar back from Gibson and it was ready to play. I didn't tell the band. And so I had my back to the band at rehearsal.
Ralph, in the industry, this is called the reveal.
Yes. The reveal. So, but the thing was, I didn't reveal it visually. I played, let's rehearse Do You Feel. We never rehearse Do You Feel. And I said, let's do, you know, so da 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 with my back to them. Da, and then I turned around and the sound in the in-ears for us was like, I turned around and they were all like this.
Wow.
It's wild to me that that could be so synonymous. It is.
Yeah. You would, because of the way it sounded.
Right. It's wild. I don't know how, to me, because I'm not a guitarist, that you can't duplicate a sound. You would think, you buy a fucking similar body, you buy similar pickups, same strings. How different could it sound? But apparently,
yeah,
that's the case. That's pretty wild.
Wood, it's all different. So right. Pickups, all different. Everything's different. You can have two. I was at Gibson yesterday at the new showroom down here in Nashville, and you can't, I was saying, you can't have two guitars, same model, made by the same guy the same day, if that were feasible. It's not, but it, you know, from beginning to end by the same guy, they would both sound and feel different.
Wow, that's pretty wild.
It is. I mean, they'd be very, very close. But,
right. You know, it's funny. You and I have something very in common, by the way, that early in your career and all throughout my career, we've just been, you know, typecast because we're so good looking.
Oh, well, you know, I mean,
it's a curse.
You know. You're talking to the teen face of 1968. He would always be, it must have driven you crazy because being a good looking guy, you were always talked about that more than the fact that you were an accomplished guitarist. As silly as it sounds, because who doesn't want that problem? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so good looking. But it is something that I would imagine was driving you crazy at some point.
Obviously, I'm very grateful to my parents for the way I look.
You would hate to be the other way around. Like, God, that friend that could play guitar, but woof, is he ugly? You wouldn't want that.
Well, in a way, it would have helped.
I'm not so sure about that, but I can't say enough good things about the book, especially doing the audio version, because I just have really enjoyed it and learning things that are crazy. Like, you're in high school and you ask your dad, who was a teacher at your high school, hey, that kid Davy Jones, can I get in a band with him? And it's fucking David Bowie. That's crazy.
That is insane.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Not only were we from the same, you know, town basically, but we ended up going to school together, and my dad was his art teacher.
It's so weird. And then stayed friends. By the way, my stepdad went to that tour, the Glass Spiders tour, and saw you on tour with them, with Bowie. So it's great that you stayed friends. And I know when your father passed, he called your mom. It's so nice to know that you guys, when you hear about all these stories of you, and I hate this, I've said this before a few other people, you almost are like the Forrest Gump of classic rock, in that you're traveling through life and you meet Ringo and you work with this guy and you're working with Harry Nilsson and Jerry, all these different people. It's almost like it's just fucking crazy all the different places you show up.
I prefer to think of myself as Zelig.
Yeah.
That's probably better.
He met Homer Simpson once. I mean,
and Family Guy. You're a Family Guy and Simpson. Yeah,
I didn't see the Family Guy, or I don't remember it.
I was the
birthday gift, the anniversary gift at the end of the show.
Death was coming to my door. and so I opened the door because I'm their favorite song. So, but whatever reason, death comes to my door and I open the door. I said, oh my God, shouldn't you be at Keith Richards' room?
I got to remember that. The Simpsons just over. I only have so much space left in my brain, Pete. So it's like, I remember the Simpsons and put that. That's great.
It's just so great. It's wild to just see, you know. Also, what I like about it is that I genuinely believe, and you different parts of your life, when you get to play with Buddy Guy, or you've played with B.B. King and all these other people that you played with, you are genuinely in awe of them.
Yes.
Where you would think a guy that's been doing this for 50 something years, that part of you would dissipate, but it doesn't seem to have dissipated at all.
No, I think it's because I don't ever believe, I've never believed that I'll be as good as I want to be. And then you meet and play with these people that were so influential on you learning how to play guitar. You know, I bow down to them, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, they created something way before me, you know, and all of the guitarists that obviously those great blues players. But to have both of them come and join me on a tour was unbelievable.
That's crazy. And then what I do like, that I think a lot of parents could take a lesson from this, and not just parents, but teachers, how supportive everybody was of you playing guitar growing up. Like, the teacher would say you could play guitar for everybody after class, and your parents were like, yeah, go join a band. Like, you were 14 or whatever it was. I don't think that would happen today. And also, I hate to say this, but I'm sure you could agree with this. What guitarist is inspiring people today? Like, what 20-year-old to 30-year-old? You're watching these guys that are 20-something years old when you're a kid,
and you're like, oh, I want to emulate that. That doesn't happen anymore for guitarists, really. And well, then you're
Marcus King. I have to say Marcus King.
I don't know who that is. I'll look him up after this. But the fact that you were allowed to play guitar in school for the kids, other kids, it's mind-boggling to me because that would never happen today.
I don't believe so, no.
It's wild.
You have to, I would have had to have had a, today you have to have like a, what'd you call it? Armored suit on to play in the school.
Yeah.
I mean, I would wonder because it seems like the one thing that never changed in the music industry has changed so much and the comedy industry, because I dabble in that. I like it. But it's like you draw, it seems like you said it perfectly. It's like you never thought.
Oh, we lost him.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy, Gino. We lost him.
That was a great shot. Can we keep
it? Look at, he looks so important right there. That's great.
Is that any better? Hello? How did you lose?
Gino, we have a legend on the fucking Zoom call. Can you get a stable internet?
I'm only a legend because I'm over 70.
No, when do you? I wonder. That's a good question. When the term legend was thrown around, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. I don't believe I'm.
No 18-year-old is ever going to be called a legend. That's true. So, by the way, although I don't know if that's true, there's probably ways you could talk about that.
All right, before we go any further, I got to tell you, one of my new favorite sponsors, it is the Chicken Skin Snacks. Chick and Skin, Chick, letter N, then Skin, is an excellent way to satisfy your crunch snack craving and is a perfect alternative to carb-heavy snacks. As someone who is in Miami right now and just ate way too much bread, I can tell you, it's much better to just do the Jew thing and have the chicken skin. They come in 8 flavors: original salt and vinegar, buffalo wing, chili lime, salt and pepper, Jamaican jerk, cluckin' hot, and cheese. So far, my 2 favorites have been salt and vinegar and cheese. But I got to tell you, it's good stuff. I love it. It's crispy. It definitely satisfies that chip feeling. Or this is what I do because I'm a goofy foodie. You crumble it all up and you put it on a salad and it makes you feel like you're doing something good for yourself because it's somewhat healthy. It's like croutons without the carbs. What can I tell you? Go to chickenskin.com. That's chickenskin.com and use the promo code SDR20 for 20% off your entire order. That is SDR20 for 20% off your entire order at Chicken Skin, chickenskin.com. All right, let's get back into it.
So a couple other things that I found fascinating. The fact that your first time, and we'll get into it later because it's one of our questions, I want to get into, which we'll talk about later, your first time having sex you talk about in the book, which I think is hilarious. We will get into that. I don't want to bring that up to the end of the show. But one of the things that I find bizarre, and I don't know how you can talk about this. So the talk box thing, right? So There's been some stories about how that started, whether it was given to you or you had it created, but that I don't care about that. The part that I'm interested in about is the song Do You Feel Like I Do originally did not have talk box. You do it live. You brought in a talk box. And there's a 2-part question here. 1, when did that start happening? And 2, knowing that you're recording it, yeah, please write it down. Knowing that you're recording it for an album, you say, I want to fuck you in the song. And that gets played on the radio for the last 50 years somehow. Right. That, so,
but the thing is that what I said?
Oh, come on now. What did you say? I want to touch you, maybe? I don't know. What else could you say? It sounds like it.
People. That's the beauty of lyrics, and that's the beauty of stuff that you can't really hear well.
So you're saying, I'm hearing it because I want to hear it?
Yes.
So that we leave up for interpretation, I guess. Fine. Yeah. But when did you start? Because in the original version, it's obviously not there. When did the talk box make it into that song?
I believe it started... possibly in 74, but it definitely was, it would have been 74 because we, 73 or 74, because we introduced it then. It was only in one song, Do You Feel? And I'll never forget the first time I did it, because my whole idea was, everyone's using talk boxes, Joe Walsh and Stevie Wonder was Joe Walsh, the most phenomenal guitar and talk box solo on Rocky Mountain Ways. So always will be. Stevie had used it on Music of My Mind talk box with this keyboard. And he had been and saying words, you know, not just all, you know, that's all about sound. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could communicate with the audience and ask them questions, you know? And I said, holy crap, why don't we do it? And do you feel like I do, you know? But the first night, usually at that point where the band comes down towards the end of the song, and it's just an extended guitar solo, which built up it. But we replaced that with the talk box.
Right.
And I did the little noisy thing of the no words at the beginning, and everybody went, huh? You know, like dogs, you know? Huh? And then I said, you know, do you feel like I do? And we felt the audience move forwards to the stage. The stage did that as I did that.
It's so wild.
It was so intense. And I have to say that even though, you know, people hear auto-tune 29 hours a day now, and they've heard the talk box by many people, but when you actually do it in that song, people go berserk still.
Right. But also when you were doing it, no one fucking heard that before. That had to be such a surreal moment. It's like, is his guitar talking to me? That's got to be insane. I can't believe it.
The thing was, I went out on tour with Joe Walsh opening for him, and I just started using the talk box. So poor Joe, instead of him doing Rocky Mountain Way first, I came in and finished up with Do You Feel with the talk box. And I'm not sure how thrilled he was about it.
And now you have your own. You have the Framptone. Are you still selling those?
We don't. It was a boutique company. We don't make them right now. But they're around. But they are the superlative talk box, obviously.
Right, of course. I mean, how else could they not be? Also, so some other interesting things that came up in the book. Obviously, you've had a long-standing career of friends with a lot of these famous people, but you're listening to the radio one day and you hear you're being considered to replace the guitarist in the Rolling Stones, and no one told you. You just hear it on radio.
I know. I'm driving. I almost had an accident. I was actually driving through a toll on the New York Thruway coming into Manhattan, and I had to pull over. After that, and you can't, in those days, you can't rewind anything, you know. So I called Scott Muni, the 2 to 6 DJ, very famous New York DJ, and I said, you know, did I just hear right? And he said, yeah, you did. And so I called Bill Wyman up and I said, what have you got me into now?
It's weird, though, that, I mean, you had the ability to call Bill Wyman, but he didn't have the ability to call you and tell you you're being considered. That's weird.
Well, the thing was, he and Charlie put my name forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I pretty much figured that Ron Wood would get it because, you know, he's much more of a Stones kind of looking person than me.
Okay, it makes sense. You kind of he looked more the part, is what you're saying.
He's more like Keith's brother. You know what I mean?
Right, I got you. And then, because everything about you, it was such a great book to listen to. I listen when I run. I talk about that a lot on the show. I run a lot. So it's a great way to motivate people to get out there. I only listen to books when I run. So if I want to hear more of it, I'm like, fuck, I got to go back out there again. You know, which is a great way to do it.
It's healthy for you.
Yeah, it's healthy for you. So you were in a movie called Son of Dracula, right? And
yes.
In that movie, you were given a guitar that had it was a Beatles guitar, and in it had the set list of the last Beatles show. That's fucking crazy.
Well, Rick Wills, who was playing bass for me in my band at that point, Frampton's Camel, Ringo asked me to come and be in this movie, a couple of scenes playing in the bands for the movie. Mm-hmm. And so when I arrived there, I brought my guitar. I said, can you bring another person from your band? We need a rhythm player. So I said, okay, but we didn't bring a guitar for him. So Mal Evans, the Beatles road manager, was there. And he said, well, I'll go and get you some, you know, some guitars. So out he goes. and he comes in, he's got in the trunk of his car, he's got all the Beatles guitars. So he's got John Lennon's black Rickenbacker, Paul's bass. And on the back of John Lennon's guitar was the set list stuck on a piece of paper for Candlestick.
That's just crazy. It's crazy. It goes back to my, my Forrest Gump analogy, that you're just like weaving in out of these crazy moments that are just, it's so surreal to me. It's wild. The last
is just a box of chocolates.
All right, before we go any further, I'm talking to a specific group of people here. Maybe you're an auto mechanic. Maybe you're a super cool do-it-yourself guy who just likes to work on their own cars. I'm talking to you guys. I want to tell you all about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. Your one-stop shop for everything auto parts, available exclusively at rockauto.com. They've been in business for 20 goddamn years. 20 years! And they make it easy for you to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys that have no idea what you're talking about, don't even know if they have the part. And even if they do, you're still going to pay those storefront markups, not at rockauto.com. You can easily find everything you need, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just working on your own car. Everyone has access to the same incredible prices at rockauto.com. So maybe you're that car guy. Maybe you are an auto parts shop, or maybe you're just some dude who likes to scroll through and look at cool parts for your car. It's available to all of you at rockauto.com. No promo code needed. That's how confident they are in their pricing. But when you do buy something at rockauto.com, tell them you heard about them on the SDR show. Rockauto.com. All right, let's get back into it.
The last album you put out, which is Frampton Forgets the Words, great instrumental. The one that I love that I listen to over and over again is your Lenny Kravitz cover. And it's interesting because you talked about this in the book, and I thought about it when I was listening. Like, when there's no lyrics, you have to rethink how you play songs.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's no storyline.
Right.
It's just a melodic storyline, you know. So I learned, because the band that really were most instrumental in getting me to play guitar were the Shadows, Hank Marvin, lead guitarist. And so I spent my first couple of years learning to play guitar, learning every instrumental and the Ventures and any instrumental band there was, I knew it, you know? So I think you learn from that. And I've worked with Hank and the Shadows on my first instrumental album, Fingerprints. And
Grammy Award-winning Fingerprints.
Thank you so much. but Hank said, well, for the second verse, we should spice it up a little bit. We got no lyrics here. And I said, listen to the man. You know, you got to listen to the man. So I learned a lot about, because those, they've had more instrumental hits than I've had, you know, vegan dinners. So.
Yeah. Are you vegetarian or vegan?
No, I'm a bit of everything. I don't eat. The only thing I don't eat is red meat. I was vegetarian for many years, but started to look, I turned green. So I thought I needed some sort of, you know, protein.
Okay. Well, it's funny because our producer Shannon's been vegan for, I think it's 2.5 years now. And I work in on my side, my other show is about health and wellness, and my partner there has been vegan, and I own a piece of a vegan restaurant, but I am not vegan. I still not sure what the right answer is. I just think everybody's wired differently. Just like you said before, every guitar is going to sound a little bit different. We all react differently to whether we need more protein, more animal protein. I had a guy on my health show that he did really well with carbs, and most people don't do well with carbs. So it just shows you that we're all fucking wired differently, and there is no simple answer to that.
I like red meat. By the way, Gino Biscani, first time, long time. Ralph, does my internet ever... Peter Frampton, that's when it goes out. That's when it goes out. All the other losers I agree to be on the air with. And then we get this loser and my... Oh, sorry, Pete. By the way, what I was asking, and I apologize for that, because here's the thing. Like, the way you say, like, you could always get... I think it's amazing that you drew so many people into your life without trying, you know, now when everything's become so fragmented. I'm just curious, like, do you believe in all that stuff? Like, you just draw the things in, the power of positive thinking. I'm not trying to hawk a Dianetics book here. I'm just genuinely curious, because the more things change, in the industry, I think that's the one thing that can help you no matter when you were doing it, whether it's the 70s with a vinyl album or 2000 with a CD or 2022 with a vinyl album. Everything comes back. Your thoughts on that? And hopefully I won't have to take your answer off air. Jesus.
Well, I mean, the thing is that starting it for me, I don't really put the question another way.
Put the question another way?
Yeah, in other words, Gino, you're long-winded and we all lost what you were trying to
play. Yeah, I just mean, like, your creative process, it's like, I just mean, like, do you just show up every day and just put out the best output you can, or do you have a long, arduous procedure process where you're like, this is, I'm going to do this album, I'm going to do this. It just seems like you're kind of more into just the moment with it, I guess.
I yes, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm very much of the moment, and I don't do a lot of planning, which, you know, unfortunately can backfire on you when you forget people's birthdays. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I think it's my kids always say, Dad, why do the little insignificant things really bug you, but the big things never affect you? It's always, oh, it's going to be okay. That's what you say, Dad. I said, well, it's true, isn't it? You know, yeah. It will be okay. Eventually, you know, I'm a survivor. I've been knocked down quite a few times throughout my career. And
that's my cat six. She gets very jealous when I'm on the laptop too long. I'm sorry.
But I think that never believing that you're good enough and being a shy person in general, but an extrovert when put on a stage, you know, and a survivor, put them all together. And I have to thank my parents for whatever genetics they gave me. I was very lucky to grow up in a very sound home. And a lot of people can't say that.
The big difference between you and I, sir, is that I firmly believe that I'm better than everybody else. But one thing that's fascinating is you're very open in the book that you had big ups and downs financially, also in popularity wise. But it's funny. I was like, I wonder if he's going to address this in the book. And you did. And it's such a weird story. The Will to Power single, which we all know, it was number one, I think, at one point. Right. And it was combining you and Freebird together. And the crazy thing, which I can't even understand how this would happen, they didn't ask for permission to cover a record. And then you ended up making way more money than you would have because of that, right?
Well, yeah. When you have a medley of two songs put together, a mashup, we call it today, then whoever wrote Lynyrd Skynyrd's, which is all of them, I think, and of course me, we would then take the 100% of publishing and split it into 50% each. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's fair. Mm-hmm. Well, because they didn't ask, both publishing companies said, we're going to ask for 100%, 100%, which they did. And nothing to do with me, but they were just a little peeved.
It's weird. You heard the song one day on the radio or something? Like, because it was, no one asked you, right?
My sister-in-law at the time was in Florida, and it was huge on the radio down there.
Yeah.
Miami. And she called me up and she said, I just heard your song, but it's not you. I said, oh, no, wait a second. What do you mean? So then I turned on the radio, and within a few, you know, hours, I'd already heard it on the radio. I went, oh, that's awful. Anyway.
And at least you made good money from it, too. It came at a good time, it seemed, right? It seemed like it was...
saved my bacon at that point.
Right. And that's what's wild about it. It came right at the right time. It's really wild.
The bottom of the curve.
Yeah. You know what's wild? I bet you don't. Maybe you do know this. One of the things I'm looking at that's crazy. So because you met you were invited to the White House at one point, and you became a U.S. citizen. And it seems like, and I could be wrong, U.S. politics got a little bit in your life. You wanted to vote. You want to be part of American culture. How ironic, and I don't want to get political, but it is weird that the day that Frampton came alive, Comes Alive came out, is the same day as the Capitol riots. That's pretty crazy.
Oh, really?
January 6th.
Wow, you know, I mean, it's are they going to blame me now?
Maybe they will blame you.
You became a registered voter when all the options began to suck. There's no good options in this country. Sorry, you should have been here decades ago, buddy.
Am I telling you something you didn't know?
I didn't realize that.
That's really crazy.
All right, before we go any further, I'm going to say now, maybe our longest-running sponsor on the SDR show, we're talking about Yolk Kratom, home of the $60 kilo. Yolk Kratom! While everywhere else on the planet, prices are going up. Maybe it's meat prices, rent, gas. Everywhere, prices are going through the goddamn roof, but not at Yolk Kratom. Yolk Kratom is always that $60 kilo. High-quality, curated Kratom direct to you at wholesale prices, and no more wondering how long that shit's been sitting on the shelf at the local bodega, or how long it's been at the 7-Eleven or the gas station or whatever. You want high-quality Kratom? You want it direct to you? You want it in cool kilos? Head on over to YoKratom.com. No one should go without Kratom in 2022, and no one should pay more than $60 a kilo. So head on over to YoKratom.com and Kratom up. All right, let's get back into it.
So also, which is, you know, talk about full circle, you tell a story about how you were able to hear Sgt. Pepper, the album, before it even came out. And then fast forward, you know, I don't know how many years later, and you're in the movie, which is, it's just crazy how circular everything in life is, you know?
As Ringo says, when anybody asks me about that, he goes, "We don't talk about that."
So, I mean, you said it in the book. Everyone kind of knew it was a bizarre movie while you were doing it, right?
Yes. But the problem with it, everyone was so high on themselves. I mean that in not drugs. I mean, literally high on themselves. Bee Gees, Robert Stigwood, my manager, and all the people around me. And, you know, you thought, well, it can't fail.
Right. Too big to fail. That's what everyone thought.
But you have to have content before you can. I mean, you can get, you know, in the old days, you could get James Dean, Marlon Brando, you know, Paul Newman, but if you've got a shit movie, they're all going to look like crap.
Right, you know? Right. But you can't even enjoy it now for its campy ridiculousness, or you can't enjoy it?
Did you freeze?
Me? I guess you're skipping it. All right, fair enough. We'll move on. All right, so a couple other things. We don't have all the time in the world with you, which I really do appreciate you giving us the time. You just announced recently that you are adding a few more shows to the farewell tour, 3 dates in the UK. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then that's it. Are you done? Because I know you come out about this IBM, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, inclusion body mitosis. Am I saying it right?
Myositis.
Myositis. I apologize. So that came about a few years ago.
Mitosis is what rabbits get.
Okay. Fair enough.
Inclusion body myxomatite. I like that. That's a new one.
And so it's a part of your life now. There is no treatment for it, really, right? And so you want to be able to farewell on your own terms. Is that fair enough?
Yes. There will be some, another handful of dates added in Europe, but it'll literally be the same kind of thing, 3 or 4 at the most. And obviously, these are the most important things to me, mm-hmm. for playing guitar. And because I can always sit down, because it has affected my legs now. I'm using a cane. But I'm still able to play guitar. It's just I'm doing a workaround, mm-hmm. because I've lost muscle in these fingers. So... but I am just betting, because I'm a survivor, and I'm a very positive person, that in November I will get there and it'll be great. So, I have to be positive, and you say there is no drug, but I am starting another trial drug. I did one already, didn't work, but there's a very, very good possibility that this new one they're going to get to me for next week.
Next week. Wow. That's right. Happening right now. That's crazy.
Yes. A couple of people have already benefited from, and it's worked.
Wow. That's wild.
You can't reverse it, but you can hold
it. You can manage it. You could keep it at, hold it at bay.
So where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I mean,
well, I'd also like to believe performing is kind of a drug. The adrenaline, the endorphins you get from that. Am I wrong? I hope I'm right.
Playing live, you mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I firmly believe that my best playing is live because off stage I'm more introverted, and on stage the audience are responsible for that. And I firmly believe that I might have a little less movement here, but the adrenaline will make my fingers twice as long. You know what I mean?
It's the energy from the crowd, right? I don't know why I keep saying energy. I'm not trying to sell anyone anything. Honestly,
really, you're coming off as a hippie.
I did LSD to get into the space. I was listening to Frampton Comes, but I honestly believe that. I've said this before as a comedian. It's like the only time I really slow down is not when I'm sick, because fortunately it's such a rush being on stage, but suddenly your body's like, no, you're tired. And I lose my voice, and it's not from screaming. It's my body saying you need a break. Yeah. But I figured, like, when you're playing, it's like, you don't even remember, like, oh yeah, these fingers are killing me, but they're not, I would hope.
No, I definitely believe in what you're saying, and willpower and adrenaline coupled together with a full house, that'll do it.
Willpower or will to power to cover your music.
Oh, that would help.
And when you're counting all that cash, I gotta feel your finger. Oh, this is, I feel great.
How do you feel about this? It's a question I've asked a lot of artists. So that two of your most famous songs of all time, Show Me the Way and Baby I Love You, you wrote them both the same, almost within a day of each other. And they both came very easily, came very quickly to you. Do you believe in the fact that most songs have to happen right away and easy? Or if you're working very hard on something, maybe it's time to let that go.
Yes and no. I mean, I wrote both songs in one day.
On a trip, like somewhere, right? Yeah.
Fucking sound like you did. Oh, was I on? I thought it was.
Well, I don't. They both have the word baby in, you know, so, and you know, then the next album, I'm In You, the original title of I'm In You was I'm In Your Way, you know, because it's got the Way series.
Right. The Way, yeah. The Way trilogy, so to speak. Right. But yeah, so are there examples of songs in your catalog that took really a long time to figure out, or are they all ones that if they don't come to you easily, you keep them?
No, I can work on something that I lost interest in last week, 6 months ago, and I'll just be in a different frame of mind, hear it differently, and it'll trigger me to finish it. You know, I remember when I write on piano, like I remember I was in England when I wrote I Want to Go to the Sun. Was on a little upright piano. And I remember that taking weeks because not only was I'm a guitar player who plays okay keyboards-ish. And so, you know, I'm not well trained on the piano. So it took me a long time, but not being able to play well, I think in some regards, restricted what I could do and made the song better. I know that sounds weird.
Well, by that theory, I should be a phenomenal songwriter because I have no talent whatsoever. Also, people that don't know, we got to wrap up with you soon, but people that don't know, you also were very involved with Almost Famous and I got a technical advisor on that and wrote some of the songs on that. And people, I don't think a lot of people know how involved you are with that. That's such a great movie. That must have been a phenomenal experience for you as well.
Yeah. I mean, working with the guys in the band and also and Cameron was great because, you know, Cameron and I have known each other since he wrote the liner notes to Frampton Comes Alive.
It's a long time. It seems like a lot of people that are in your life have been in your life for a very long fucking time. It's pretty wild.
Well, I guess so. Yeah. And I you know what? I'm trying to reconnect with a lot of those. You know, now that I have more time, I'm not on the road all the time. It's great to spend, obviously, spending more time with my children is a must, you know, is so fantastic. So I'm so appreciative of that right now. But yes, I've been reconnecting with a lot of old friends.
That's great. All right. So now you didn't want to know what this question was before the last question we asked. So we're going to do it now. The name of the show is The SDR Show. And this is the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
What we do is we ask every guest since the dawn of time their first experience with all three, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We start with rock and roll, and we ask...
Six would really like to know the answer to these three, so she's going to sit in for this.
Rock and roll is the first concert you ever went to, but hopefully, Ben, we're going to know. The first concert you ever went to.
First concert I ever went to, it was probably a local band, but it would have probably have been... The Herd before I even joined them.
Wow, that's wild. So that happens to you a lot. Like you see a band that you love and then you end up playing with them. It's ridiculous.
Why doesn't anyone listen? You don't understand how powerful your law of attraction is. And I know it's a little late to fill you in on this, but you can draw, like the second you said, yeah, The Herd, and then I'm like, of course you did. Everything you say is not amazing to me. It's like, yeah, of course. Okay. Shutting up again. Six, quiet down, Six.
I was this, you know, 15-year-old kid and I would go to the shows, local shows, and I would go up to them at halftime and I'd say, you really need me to sit in. You know, I talk about bravado.
That's
you know,
great.
I think it's balls actually, but nice. Yeah. And of course, okay, kid, yeah, let's get us to play with her.
That's then, really crazy.
And then, oh, wow, the kid's so bad, you know, so.
That's really why. Now, the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
No, weed was my first drug.
The first one after that?
Probably a Valium.
A Valium. That was after the car accident or?
Wait a second. Well, no, there's a lot going on before the car accident. no, I mean, it was either a line of Coke or a Valium. And usually the Valium came after the line of Coke.
Fair enough. And now this story you talk about in the book, but we ask about your first time having sex and it's just hilarious. And you need to just please share that story with us.
Okay. Well, you know, now by now that, you know, when I was 14, I was in a band called The Preachers and Bill Wyman was producing it.
Right.
We did a record with him and ended up on TV with the Stones and all that stuff. And so anyway, Bill would call me up, you know, after he'd seen I was a player, and he asked me to play on sessions that he was producing for other people when I was 14, 15. And so anyway, he's now calling me every other week. Hey, you want to come up, come over to my place and, you know, hang? And so I said, well, yeah, I'd love to. So now I'm becoming a really good friend with Bill, and he's just... he's kind of showing me the ropes, you know, because he can see where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so then he calls up one day and he says, do you think you could come up to the clubs in London, you know, over the weekend? We could go up. And so I said, well, you better speak to my mother about that, you know. So she gets on. Bill Wyman is on the phone with my mother. Yes,
so
Bill. Yes, Bill. What is it now? Can you get... Mrs. Frampton, can I take Peter up to London to a club? And she said, well, he'll have to be back by midnight. Okay. All right. So she actually let me go, you know. So, well, that was the first time. And I was back by midnight. And then Bill said, well, I can't keep getting you back by midnight because I'm going to stay with my girlfriend, Astrid, who we then married. And so he said, we go to the club and Astrid's brought a girlfriend, very nice girlfriend. And we go back to the girlfriend's apartment after the clubs. And there's one bedroom with two single beds. Bill is in one bed with said girlfriend to be wife soon. And I in the other bed with this very nice lady. And things went fantastically well.
And you're just to recap, you're 14 at this point, right?
14 or 15. But not 16.
So, and Bill Wyman gets you your first sniz. Let's put it that way, right? Okay, continue.
So then the kicker to the story is this, that, you know, Bill says, well, how was that then? And I said, well, thanks very much. You know, so anyway, about 8 or 9 days later, I don't know, I'm just itching a little bit, you know? Little itchy coo down there. So I look down there and I swear I see something moving. So I have to go to my mother and say, Mom, what's this? And she looks and she goes, that bleep Bill Wyman. So she marches me up to the end of the road. Miss, I'll never forget his name as long as I live, to the chemist, the pharmacy, and Mr. Dickinson. And we walk in there. There's about 3 or 4 people in there. And my mother goes, Mr. Dickinson? Yes, Peggy? He's got the crabs. So that was, and it was like, oh my God.
Wow. Talk about,
that was her payoff. That was
Yeah, she had to put her 14-year-old son back in check, screaming to everyone, you got crabs. That's crazy. Kind of ironic that his name was Dickinson. So you got that in there as well. And then lastly, just on this, recently I saw that you joined the Les Paul Foundation with Slash and Richie Sambora. What is that about exactly?
It's basically just an advisory board for the Les Paul Foundation, and just making sure that anything that's done in its name is done apropos, and ideas, if we have ideas for the foundation, then, you know, I'm sure there'll be, I can't wait for our first board meeting. That'll be fun.
That's going to be wild. Jesus Christ. All right. So just again, the 3 UK dates are up now. There might be some more later. You go to Frampton.com or at Mr. Peter Frampton on Instagram. And the book that I cannot say enough good things about, but get the audiobook of Do You Feel Like I Do, the memoir that was co-written or at least advised by Alan Light, who's done Tupac's book and Prince's book and the Beastie Boys book. So it's like a great, I can't say enough good things, and especially the little guitar interludes through it. I really, really enjoyed it. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go around and do the rest of the plugs?
No. I've just, you know, the Frampton Forgets the Words album and the book are the two things that are out there. I'm very proud of both, and thank you for everything you've said about it. So that's great.
Gino, let's hope your internet lasts long enough for you to do your plugs. Do you have plugs, Gino?
It was a pleasure meeting you. Gino Visconti, they know where to find me, and I hope Shannon should do this more, because if everyone's getting the feed I'm getting, it looks like Frampton's in the lower left and she's just doting on every fucking word that comes out of his mouth, which is good, because then they didn't notice that I was doing the exact same fucking thing in real life. It's been a goddamn pleasure. Thank you for letting me board. But yeah, GinaBisconti.com.
Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast called Good Sugar, it comes out every Monday on health and wellness, currently in the top 100 of health and wellness. And we're opening our first location on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street in Manhattan in end of May. And that'll be a vegan store with a no single-use plastics are going to be there for that. That's the motif of the place. And then I have to ask you one last question, Peter, before we play a song. Oh, Shannon, I'm sorry, your plugs. I forgot Shannon's plugs because I haven't seen her face the whole time. Go ahead, Shannon. Shannon?
Sorry, I am here. I was just sitting in the corner doting on the stories. You were a great guest, Mr. Peter Frampton. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates. Thank you. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts, not goats. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on and they tell their personal accounts of a bad date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience that creeped them out that could possibly be paranormal.
And now, Peter, the question we ask you, do not give an indication until we all lock in our votes. Does Peter Frampton believe in ghosts? I'm going to say yes. Gina, what do you say?
No, he's so numb to the energy that he draws in, he doesn't believe in ghosts. Right,
Shannon,
realize.
What do you say? What do you say, Shannon?
I'm going to use the same thing I've used with a lot of the legendary rock stars we've had on, that they've toured so much, they've probably stayed in places that are potentially haunted. And at least at some point, something must have gotten that him to where at least he questions the presence of a ghost. So I will say on the side of yes.
Okay, Peter, what is your answer? Yes or no? Do you believe in ghosts?
Basically no. Oh. But then I've heard stories, like Bill Wyman has a house in Suffolk, and there's one bedroom where people swear that in the middle of the night a couple was sleeping in the bed staying over, and they both turned over in the middle of the night and there was somebody else in the middle of the bed. It wasn't Bill.
Wow. Well, maybe just some very horny fan that snuck in.
No, it was not solid. It was an apparition. So I don't know. I believe in aliens.
I think you have to believe in aliens. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I've got one living in this building, I think.
And then the last question, I'm doing two interviews today and I feel that they could not be more polar opposites. And I'm curious if you know who he is or if he's going to know who you are. So I'm just going to ask you, I have a bet on who's going to know who. Did you ever hear of the guy Cisco?
Yes.
Ah, shit, I was wrong. I thought for sure he's going to know you, but you're not going to know him. So I just lost money. God damn it. All right. Every time we add a song to our playlist, the SDRshow.com playlist, .com/playlist. Sorry, I have to add this one because it continues the way theme of Mr. Peter Frampton from his latest record of all instrumentals. It's Are You Gonna Go My Way? The instrumental version. We'll add that to the playlist. Mr. Peter Frampton, it was a goddamn honor. Thank you so much for coming on the SDR show. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the SDR show.